regional. So in the U.S., there are some places that are even more clock time oriented and perhaps even more faster paced. Cities are rated by their level of public clock time accuracy. There's one of my favorite studies that says the more accurate the public timepieces, the more stress there is in a society, right? And so, which makes me love the Quad Cities, because all the public timepieces in the Quad Cities, like banks, it'll say 12:42, and then it'll say 12:45 over here, and I always am kind of happy about that, because I'm like, oh, we're a little less stressed out, because look, none of the clocks match. Right? Makes me happy. Questions on this? Or how about some examples from those who sort of felt like, like Chuck, you said you identified more as polychronic. How did you make that connection?
I think it's been a transition from out of a corporate setting where it's driven by product to living a life in wholeness. There's been definitely a shift in how you have to, how you manage the day, and not so much that's anchored by time. Mm-hmm. Or in that sense of what I was using in the corporate world. Example came to mind because I think there was a recent story in about the train that left in Japan for, I don't know, 4 seconds earlier. I don't know the details, but and everyone was hugely upset.
Yes.
It did not go off precisely at the time it was supposed to go.
Yep.
So how our cultures move us to get on that way, and you either have to go to exist or not. So.
Yeah. If we look at our clocks to know what we're supposed to do, if we look at our watches to know what we're supposed to do, then that's sort of like a monochronic thing. That's not a bad thing. That's been most of my life. But sometimes it's a skill set to be able to set that down and say, what do I really most need? Can I, sometimes I love the to-do list, but are there things really I don't need to do, right? It's not just monochronic that makes us incredibly busy and stressed out, but it's monochronic. I mean, this has ties to individualism. This has ties to a number of other ways of living and sort of ways that we imagine ourselves and others. And we might not have a choice because we live inside a structure, right? Barb.
Gives me freedom.
Yeah.
And so there's just a relationship here.
There can be a lovely dialectic, maybe in some ways, of because there's a structure. I think Holden does this. Because there's a structure at Holden, many people can experience sort of more polychronic ways of living. That I don't think exist in a lot of spaces. And, I mean, for guests, at least, I know. But maybe for staff, too, I don't know. But I think Holden operates on multiple time levels, and I think that's partly why it works so well. Other examples or thoughts on? Yeah. Nope.
In monochronic time. And so it took a couple of years for the state to come to agreement with the tribe and begin that work again.
Yeah. And that, folks who study international business will always, they'll learn about ways of different nations and groups and larger, you know, but it doesn't mean that it's easy to live in that and be okay with that. Right. Yeah, Ben.
First thing I think of relating it to church life is like in a Lutheran church, you have a 2-page bulletin maybe, and you know that it's going to be an hour. Right? And but in Waterloo, We have a really vibrant and wonderful Black community and a lot of predominantly Black congregations. And you know, like, when I visit those churches, it's a one-page bulletin, and you're in for 4 hours.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
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 And, not that, you know, it's polytonic.
It absolutely is. And so if there's something amazing happening, you go with it. You go with it, right? And I can't tell you the number of times we've been in the heart of an amazing discussion in class. Like, well, on good days, right? And so, and then it's time and everybody packs up. Even those who are like leaning forward and engaged in conversation, and then it's boom. I'm like, one time we were talking about this very thing, this very subject in class, and everybody was into it, and they all started packing up. I'm like, this is it! This is it! This is exactly what's happening, right? Monochronic, because the time said, but we're not done, are we? And they were like, no. It was really fun. Yeah, right? And they're like, gotta go. Dr. Rawl, see ya.
I used to be a conference planner, and so when I went to a conference planning workshop in Japan in preparation for that, they told us whatever amount of time it takes you to accomplish a task, like selecting a hotel, they said it will take you twice as long in Europe and four times as long in Japan. And that really proved to be true. And then in that same next couple of years, I was simultaneously, there's a word for you, planning a conference in Japan and one in Puerto Rico. And it was just fascinating. neither was right or wrong.
Right.
It was so different.
Yeah.
The approach is mostly having to do with structure, but mm-hmm. it's societal structure.
Yeah.
Know, how many people had to weigh in to give assent to something. But yeah. It was related to their sense of order.
Order and time and hierarchy and competition and all sorts of things, expectations that we set for ourselves and our families and our students and our coworkers. I mean, like, there are things, all of these things are related. One of the things I love best about studying time is that I feel like it opens up room to let go of expectations in a way that sometimes are inappropriate, because everybody I know works so hard and tries to get as much as they can out of every minute, right? But minutes aren't time, right? This is something else. And anyway, it's relaxing in a way to study. Go ahead.
Well, I take comfort in that as I perceive the ministry of Jesus, death, polychronic, mm-hmm. just from what we get from the scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I'm monochronic, is what I do, that pushes me, that counters me to reconsider. At least try some balance.
Mm-hmm.
And I love, you know, Ecclesiastes 3, the season for everything in heaven.
Yeah.
Scripture that says 1,000 years is like 1 day, 1 day is like 1,000 years for God. So
yeah.
Just these rich images of time and season in
Scripture. Yeah. And in the seasons of my life, I've been interested in time differently. So, was it Mindy? No.
Christy,
when you said you were a mom and a pastor, some of my original interest in this was in parenting and work-life balance and this constant feeling pulled in every direction and not enough time for anything, and I felt like I was doing nothing well. And I read a lot about that. I read a lot about parenting, and I read a lot about, you know, sort of quote-unquote work-life balance. Other people talk about flow and, like, different seasons. And that was absolutely a monochronic concern that I had, and it was impacting my life in tremendously important ways. It didn't solve my problem to learn about time cultures, right? It didn't solve it, but it did give me some other options, and it did help me, right, to sort of read over time about how expectations for parents have ratcheted up over the years, and about how much fear, this is fear not, right? This is fear not week. So much anxiety in parenting, and am I doing right by my child? Like, before a child is even born, are you reading to your child? Are you talking to your child all the time? There's all of this constant, you know, you can always be doing something wrong by not doing something. It's a doing orientation, right? Value orientations that are cultural value orientations. There's doing orientations, being orientations, and growing orientations. Some of that has to do with religious sort of teachings, right? Zen Buddhism would be perhaps more being oriented, right? In a little clip I showed last time, there was a claim about Protestant and Catholic and a Protestant work ethic of a doing sort of orientation, and you've got to, you know, but I don't know, I'm not a religion scholar, but others could probably speak more to that sort of fruitfully in another session. In any event, in the seasons of my life, like I started out really, really interested in that, in parenting. And if anybody wants to talk about parenting in time, that might be one of the groups that we're going to decide how to split up into groups to talk about some of the things that I'll discuss next. That might be one that's fruitful, right? Okay. I'm going to show you just a little clip. Elaine knows this because Elaine was here at the time. Just a song. 4 years ago was my first time at Holden, and I taught a class on time here with two other professors. Somebody was teaching about consumerism. Another was teaching about environmental ethics, and then I was teaching about time. And it was a beautiful, lovely learning community. And our students, we let them decide what sort of final project to do. And they decided they wanted to write a musical and perform a musical and film it. So they made a film. And they had one of their, each class had a song associated with it. And I just thought it would be fun for you to see this class, this song. So these are some Augustana College students singing about time at Holden and learning about time. So it's a 5-minute interlude, but I thought you might find it fun. Let's see. Hopefully you can understand. I did not make a lyrics sheet, but the premise here is that somebody comes to Holden Village.
It's more organic and slower paced.
Yeah, I've heard of that. The opposite is monochronic time. It's more of a linear, ordered approach.
Can you hear that? Mm-hmm. Is it coming out in speakers for you? Okay. Weird. Okay. I'll try to turn it up a little bit if we need to. Okay.
People do things one at a time and stop when the clock tells them to do something else.
That sounds like the way the entire country runs.
Yeah, but there are problems with that.
Like what?
Sorry.
I've been listening to you, but I don't understand.
Can you understand?
The clock and the way you told me how to know.
Excuse me?
There's a book sitting right next to her.
I know. She could pick up a book, right? Yes, exactly. And this, and the part of the story is they, Holden Village changes because somebody come, you know, because people come in and they shop and they start moving really fast and they start, you know, like, and what is it, how does it change the character of Holden Village? So it's a cute little film, but part of what they got out of that was they were sort of associating monochronic with incredible fast pace, which is sort of how it is experienced now. It doesn't have to be, but it is now. And not just, but it takes a, it's a countercultural thing to let that go. Okay, how do I get out of this now? No. There.
Mm-hmm. And but on my own time, it's my own time. And quite a few years ago, one of the TV networks had an ad campaign that really irritated me. Must see TV. No.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I have no moral obligations.
Right. 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 What I need to do, but what do I need?
Yeah.
I mean, we learn what to want. We weren't, in some cases, we weren't learn what fun is, and we learn, in some cases, what we think we need, and that's bound up as well. And constant messages about, and busyness is status, and you know, but these things have, they do have effects on our mental health and our physical health. And like to the extent that it works for us, great. Busy can be great, right? But if it's controlling us, then knowing that this is a learned concept, societies learn and teach it, but we can also have some flexibility, at least partly in some parts of our lives. And I like to also think about where we have influence over others. And is there a way that we are also allowing others to sort of live in the moment? And I'm an interpersonal communication teacher, scholar and teacher. And unstructured time is what we need to form friendships, is what we need to form romantic relationships. Structured time is awesome for maintaining, but forming, we often need unstructured time for that, for spouses, for children, for friendships, right? And we don't have a lot of unstructured time. There are a lot of folks I know who live very monochronic and they structure in unstructured time. They'll be like, and I do that, I kind of do that too. I'll like put a hold on a whole day on my Google Calendar so it looks like I'm busy the whole day and I'll write free or something, right? But with constant access to you and constant, you know, need and demand and 24/7 availability, there's a lot of a felt pressure, and that's both cultural and it's professional, but there, in some cases, we might have some modicum of control over it, and that's just all I'm asking is for us to think about where we have some space to learn differently or to live differently. Yeah.
I think in the intro I heard something about, and maybe I got this phrase right or wrong, the disease of hurriedness.
Hurry sickness?
Hurry sickness.
Yeah, yeah. It is a thing. Hurry sickness is a thing where you can't slow down, right? And it actually took me probably 3 days after I entered the village to really relax into Holden, right? And I don't live an incredibly dictated, incredibly fast-paced life, but compared to a lot of folks, but still, it took me a while, right? And just sort of a funny metric, like to sort of, Robert Levine, who wrote a book called The Geography of Time, where he looks at time in different cities and different countries and different cultures, right, had something that caught my imagination and I thought it was hilarious, and that was the honkometer. I've lived in lots of, it is what it sounds like, that it's, how long does it take before a light turns green when you're driving your car before the car behind you'd honk? And it was sort of tongue-in-cheek, honkometer, but that's sort of related to the level of get-up-and-go-ness, right? And I used to live in Washington, D.C. I've lived in lots of places all over, and the honkometer, that thing was real. Like, you could barely turn green before honk, like, go, 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 just constant, right? And as I'm going to tell a little bit of story of myself at 23 to bring these together, it was part of my very early interest in time. I thought, as a 23-year-old, that I could live in Washington, D.C. and live according to my own values, right, and it was a very workaholic place when I lived in D.C. in the late 80s, and work and work and work, and I'm 23. I'm sharing a house with three other young women, 23, and my first job out of undergrad, William and Mary, and I would, you would go to work and work and work and work, and then come home and talk about work, go to happy hour and talk about work, and it was nonstop, and I just, but I used to think it was kind of fun, silly and funny that I would take the metro, and the metro would come literally every 2 or 3 minutes. Every 2 or 3 minutes it would come. And people would just, like, when the lights would start to flash because the train was going to pull in, people would just start running to, like, catch that next metro train, catch that next train. And I just remember thinking that was so silly because in 3 minutes there's going to be another. Like, it's okay, people. You know, I would think in my head, right? And briefcases, out of my way. Until one day I ran for the train. And I was kind of devastated. I was on the train thinking, I mean, I thought I could live here and not be affected by the pace and not be affected by it, but I am affected by it. And I saw that for the first time then and decided this is not the right place for me because I didn't ever want to do that. And that's when where's my Chapel Hill friend, my Carolina? Yes. That's when I started looking around for other places to live. And I chose Chapel Hill in part because I thought it had less of a, you know, it wasn't the honkometer in Chapel Hill was not that bad, right? People would let you, right? You know, it wasn't so hard on people, right? You do, yes, yeah. But that's okay. People are friendly when you, right? And that was hurry sickness, and that's a thing. That's a real thing. There is other words for that, too, neurasthenia or, you know, some other things that are sort of stress-related that are not you can't slow down, right? That's when I found out that it's not just my decision. My environment affects me a lot, and that I had to make some choices and make some decisions about it. So that's when I went to Chapel Hill. That's why, I stumbled into my whole life is an accident, but I stumbled into my field. I didn't know communication studies existed. So it ended up being lovely, but it was a shock to me how much I was being affected by the pace of the environment in which I was living. I'm sure we all have ideas about that. Singular, also associated with pace is sort of a panic in a lot of people. I felt it certainly when I was full-time mothering and professing and, you know, engaging in all of these things. But time scarcity, like an economic concept of anything that's scarce, any scarce resource, there can be fear associated with it. If it's not there, it worries me to the extent that it's important, right? If I don't have enough air, it matters. I'll get anxious about it. There's an anxiety that's associated with a felt lack of time that people absolutely feel, this sense of time scarcity. There can be a panic about it. I'm wasting time, right? And so there are religious traditions. There are one, the app of the year, I think last year, was called Calm, which was just 1 minute. Just look at this app, and it's supposed to just sort of center you, right? There's this sense of this notion of time scarcity is acting upon us, but that's a construction. And in other ways of thinking about time, you can just, there's not more or less of it is what it is. We have what we have. But this idea is embedded in our daily, and there's panic. What if I don't get enough stuff on my to-do list done, right? So this is about the lived experience of every day. And there are some psychologists who talk about stopping cognitive restructuring, that talk about stopping that voice in our head that says we don't have enough time, I'm running out of time, and just stopping it, just telling it, I do have enough time.
I think it rubbed off on my dog.
On your dog?
Say, she knows exactly when it's 4 o'clock. It's time to eat. And if
sweet.
I'm in the middle of a lesson, she'll stand there and stare at me.
Well, she's helping you. She's helping you remember. Yeah. That's so sweet, Barbara.
There's a quote from Billy Graham that I read recently, and they asked for one of the lessons from his life, and he said, it's brevity.
Yeah. Yeah, it's brevity. And I've lost a lot of friends in their 40s, way too young. As well, and that's another one of my interests, is I don't want to feel pulled all the time, and then just, you know, and so, yeah, it's brief, yeah.
Christy. In Gabi Play, which is the thing I did at work with last night, which mm-hmm. was storytelling, there's a phrase that says, we have all the time we need, and I just love
yeah.
that phrase, because
yeah.
I don't live that, but I yeah. love to hear
it. Yeah.
We have all the time we need, and
yeah.
sometimes I can repeat it to myself, I'm like, oh, okay, it changes.
It does. I mean, yeah. And if you repeat it more, like, you really do. We really do. Yeah.
So the second half of the theme for the week could be, fear not, we have all the time.
We do. Honestly. But yes. Chuck?
Yeah, there's a word that I dropped from in a John Muir quote, having lived up here for now, and that's the song. Saunter through the forest rather than hike through the forest. That it just will put you in the rhythm of the earth rather than your own.
It's wonderful.
I wonder if anybody's taken a picture of a group when they came in, and then take a picture of when they leave.
Oh, yeah.
And see the transition of what's been shed. How much healthier you look when you leave in this environment than when you came in.
My students talk to me about that a lot when we spent 7 weeks here in the winter in 2014.
There's a dichotomy there, because I'm not mm-hmm. sure that the people who live here and work here feel that same spaciousness that a guest can achieve. And I find that in my work that's hard, because
yeah.
when you are working here and you're scarce on staff,
yeah.
which I am also always, that pressure of what needs to get done still abides here.
Yeah. And that might be a fruitful conversation as we, because now we can move into a time where we talk about the things that are most compelling to you. And maybe there's a group to talk about, is there a way to make time more spacious for staff at Holden Village who work really hard. And I am so grateful for what, but I do, I have worried sometimes about the, am I able to experience this incredible gift of just being, you know, and the, in non-judgmental space and just use and just be there however I want. Like, I want that for this staff too. And I worry because as a guest, I'm always like, what's your story? What's your story? And like, I'm fascinated by everybody who's so awesome to be here for such long periods of time. But I also, yeah, I worry that I'm a drain on you too, you know.
It's interesting that we think about something that, like a rock, that is solid, you know, it's not going to change. Here it is, but it has a natural frequency. It has a natural time to it, and it will, in fact, change over a millennia or two or a hundred millennia, whatever. You know, most everybody here has probably had a quartz watch sometime. It's exactly what it is. It has a natural frequency.
That's lovely. So I need to learn more about that.
Have our natural time.
Yeah. And sometimes it'd be great to just turn that frequency, like just shift it a little if I had. But knowing is power. Like we can ask ourselves, can I slow down here? And in some times of your life you can, and sometimes you can't, you know. But sometimes we can. So Ben, did you have a hand up?
No?
No, I do that all the time. Okay. So we don't have to do this. We can just, you know, but this is a starting point for me to think about. Like I don't have agency in some parts of my life I can't just decide I'm going to live in a polychronic manner because there will be punishment for me. Right? But where I might have options for pace change, or let's just see who wants to talk about what and split off into groups and just talk to each other for about 20 minutes about where you might have options. What do you want to talk about? Or we don't have to. Barn?
For thought, but I'm not sure I'm ready to talk about it.
Maybe that's not the right thing for us here.
Not the right time.
Maybe it isn't the right time. I mean, I'm certainly getting that quiet. There's a quietness. There's sort of a contemplation that's happening that's... Maybe it needs to be there. Maybe it needs to be there. Right. Okay. Yeah.
I have to thank Ben for allowing me to take time to share with them this morning when we wanted to go something else. And the people I were with respected that. And that's a gift to me.
Yeah. That's really cool because it's hard to get off schedule. That's lovely. Yeah.
It seems to me that perhaps, well, for me, those moments in my life when someone has taken time, you know, to be with or to listen to me were precious gifts.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's a different way to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is.
How precious that is. Mm-hmm.
Your picture of the family setting for your polyphonic time.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a culture.
Yeah.
Get together to sit at a table.
Yeah. Philip Zimbardo talked about that over time, the percentage of families that report having meals together is plummeted. But I think there's a resurgence, because I do think that we've reached sort of a tipping point where a lot of people, I believe people see sort of the craziness of crazy busy and have started to at least more, I believe there's a bit more of a cultural conversation about being countercultural, intentionally trying to simplify, right? So I do think that there's a bit of a tipping point there, but I don't know. Some other way. Does anybody know the answer to that? I don't know. Say again?
I think it was after post-war and the more progressive political movements, but I don't think Europe was ever as capitalist as the United States.
And individualism breeds competitiveness. And the mobility of our culture, the more highly technical and the more specialized, the more mobile, because I can't just have a job in my tiny discipline in my hometown. I have to move to where my job is. And so there's isolating factors, when there's like pace factors, and there's increasing, right? And so all of the things are part of this web. But most places that I've been have breaks built in. Have a kind of a siesta sort of thing in China, even 2 hours in the middle of the day where there's no classes, and in Spain, you know, and in lots of like nations that you go to, there's built-in relaxed time. Doesn't mean everybody uses it for relaxed time, but more people do. And in terms of leave, family leave, right? We have now some more over the last number of decades. Some states and some areas, there is paternity leave, for example, where they didn't used to be, but people feel, men feel pressure not to take it, and or can't afford it. And the maternity leave for, you know, for mothers as well, not long, and it's not guaranteed paid, you know. So there's all kinds of ways that relationally, family, like what is subservient to the efficiency or the productivity that is associated with, you're losing time. And there is, like, you get 6 weeks, you get time, not necessarily when you're ready, right? I don't know anybody who's, you know. So the metric is one of, that's divorced from the person. The metric is divorced from experience.
A really interesting example of that commodification, Monica has run into notice because she used to work in hospice. And yeah. I don't mean to denigrate human resource personnel, but they've got bereavement codified. So
yes.
You get 0 days for pet, and so many days for cousin, and so many more days for sister, and more for parent or whatever. And it's very regimented. You know, it's like 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days for a lived experience.
Right.
Could be, you know.
And that's also based. It's also based on a very individualized, very nuclear family vision of what family is,
yeah,
instead of extended family and communal
zero
living.
Zero.
Yeah. That's unimaginable. Like, that's not human, right?
Yeah.
In a way that is,
yeah,
but it's built in a, oh, wow, commodifying grief.
Yeah, right. It's right there. One, two, three, four.
Wow.
You know?
Both on your head. Go for it.
I have not a put down, because I'm very aware of a young parent now raising children in our society. So I want to throw out to you, how could you take care of me if I came to you with dementia in the system that I grew up where you took care of
right.
the parents or the grandparents? How could you do that and juggle me in that life cycle. I mean, I can't. It just has to be mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. And people
are not put down for the way we live. But
nope.
It used to be mom and dad could move in with you and possibly function. But we're getting more people senile like me that don't have any place to go.
And it's isolating and scary. And, Sam?
I'm not sure that ever did work. When our mom had a stroke, there were five of us available, and we could not organize ourselves to the point where we could have 24/7 with her.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't do it. Five of us, two not even working, two retired, but we couldn't move in with her. That wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many other options, and I'm glad we have nursing homes. But neither they can afford one.
No.
I just wanted to say something about structure.
Yes.
I never worked except a couple of times. I always had a provider for me. So I could be home, raise the kids, do all the stuff that happens at home. And I have a friend that said, 30 years ago, she said her time was worth $30 an hour. She was doing exactly what I was doing. Not working outside of home. I mean, it's worth a bundle of money to have somebody at home.
Yeah.
But I was asked to do a job, to give a talk, and I knew about it 3 months ahead of time. When you're doing your own time, you're judging what you do. And it was absolutely a frantic, insane thing right at the end.
Yeah.
And I heard a talk on the radio. Remember radio?
It's
wonderful. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, and they were talking about that. There's been a study. Why people don't do what they think they are going to do.
Procrastinate.
In time to get it done. And it's a human thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over the world. They've been doing studies on it. People procrastinate, and they do what they enjoy first. And if it's some job that you aren't thrilled about or don't know about, then you're going to procrastinate on that and look. But they can be very beautifully accomplished right at the last minute. So, don't give up hope.
That's right. Yes, go ahead.
Back to the question that no one had time to do that.
Uh-huh.
I was in an airport and visiting with a man, and his father was dying, and it takes you 3 months to get into hospice in Florida.
Whoa.
So that's why I posed that question to you, because we're running out of places and spaces and people to do this.
Yeah.
So where am I going to be put for 3 months?
Right.
Until somebody has time.
Right.
Maybe you'll quit. That's what my mom did. That's what his mom did, too.
Mm-hmm.
They just
Well, let me take us to some of the talk about when we feel pressed, right? At that Robinson and Godby, there are some political scientists, I believe, actually, and scholars who've studied time and who sort of came to some conclusions about that I wanted to share sort of towards the end here, and there are in their view perhaps one critical variable in how satisfying future time use will be revolves not so much around technology efficiency or reorganization of society, but around people's ability to appreciate. And there's something about the slowing down of appreciation, of looking at something, of when you thanked Ben for that appreciation, that does something to mark a moment and to relax us, right? And that's something we can all do, even if we can't change a structure in which we operate. we can ask ourselves, what do I most appreciate right now? And reflect on it. And there's a way of almost building time, of just in that ability. And they speak about that as... I find it holy. And they spoke about it in this work as time savoring skills. So as instead of time saving skills, we might cultivate time savoring skills in order to appreciate simpler delights of life as they're occurring, the taste of good food, the presence of good company, the delights of good fun and silliness. Sounds like Holden. It totally signs. It is. And it's and all the little moments of loveliness that's in some of my best memories, right? Or of just little fun moments, right? But time savoring skills and the ability to appreciate, it's a skill set. That's a skill set that when we are running fast, we're not usually cultivating. Because when I'm running fast, sometimes I love it because I feel like Wonder Woman. I'm like, did that. And I'm just like, check. And I love that. But I go off the rails sometimes too fast, right? And then, and this is another way of being. And this is a portal. I think this is a way in to kind of getting out of the time scarcity or of the panic or of the, and that's of appreciating, of time savoring skills. So that's something that we could all do, right? I'm just going to end there because but it's related to some of the consumer ideas that came up before. By appreciating more, we might be able to help build a more sustainable society. I'll just read again. While efficiency, at least as envisioned in American society, always starts with wanting more, appreciating may start both with valuing more what is already here and with wanting less. I think that's a time-related concept.
Well, I have found that for me, just being time to be grateful has been a very wonderful experience, plus it's stress relieving.
Yeah. A concept, just a practice that I read about some years back that was really impactful to me, and it was about apologizing less and thanking more. So if I'm late, it's not I'm sorry I'm late, it's thank you for your patience. And it just turns into the something that, you know, we use against ourselves to be, you know, grateful, and, you know, and it changes whole interactions. To stop apologizing for late, and that's a gratitude thing too. Yeah.
Have you ever thought about worship and time and what it functions in this discussion?
Yes, and more in conversation with people who know a whole lot more about it. But I've thought about it in terms of Vespers and in some of the simplicity of some of the ways that people worship at Holden. That I find it more at Holden than in other places where it's still very much like you don't go over the hour, you know, like you don't because people cut songs because like sermon went too long, right? Right. And, but what are your thoughts?
Well, it is an invitation to be mindful about this scripture reading.
Yes, it is.
To try
yes.
to forget everything else and yeah. be mindful about this hymn. And, yeah. you know, it invites you yeah. to not be so,
it invites you.
We don't succeed. We don't always accept the invitation, but it creates a space, a time for that.
And again, the skill set of being able to be present oriented when a to-do list is future oriented, and it can take us away from this moment right here, and it's a skill that has to be practiced, like anything, you know.
I was going to say when I was president of the board of my church,
there was all this tension around how long board meetings were, and my goal was to make them so interesting no one cared.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
And I think the same could apply to worship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe that's something that we can do. It's just to have it be a gratitude-filled space.
Yeah. I don't know. That caught my ear in your first lecture. Mm-hmm. I had never thought about God creating a sacred time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's what Sabbath is this time to appreciate time. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But to say, I have this whole day or half day or evening.
Yeah. Just the space to just be.
And appreciate time. Mm-hmm.
I'm done with y'all. I'm done. What do y'all think? Wrap us up?
Thank you.
Thanks for that.